Welcome to episode number 9 of Pest Control Millionaire. Today we have the man, the boss, Garrett Matthews of Treeport, Louisiana. He runs Matthews Lawn and Pest. We've been good friends for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now.
No longer than that.
And he's doing some massive things down there. Wanted to get him on the podcast. It's an honor to have you here. Like I said, you're doing some really big things, and we all like to learn from people that are in front of us. So welcome to the show, buddy.
All right, thank you.
So we can just get back into talking right where we started off. So you guys are heavy into Christmas lights right now.
Yeah. Yes. It's been a good year. It's fun to watch. So, you know, we got in early when there weren't a lot of people doing it, and we're fortunate to build up a pretty decent book of reoccurring clients. But it still doesn't, the growth hasn't stopped. The first year we did it, there were only two people doing it at scale in our market. There were, two or three others that were doing it this year. I think we know of 20 plus people that are hanging lights this year. So yet at the same time, we're still hitting our goals. We're still growing it year after. So it's been fun. It's been a fun ride for sure. It's a really awesome labor gap. Because for us, we've got warm season turf and things start really slowing down around the October, November time frame, and it allows us to just keep our guys seamlessly working and rolling from one month to the next. And then we do H-2B labor, H-2B visas for labor. So, they all go back home in December, and all these lights that went up have to come down. So, our guys, we're just fortunate. It really bridges that gap because, we spend the whole month of January getting lights down, boxed up, stored, and then you have to just worry about February. So,
yeah, where do you store all your stuff at? It's got to be pretty big.
We use shipping containers. Yeah. We've got several of them just stacked up side by side in the back of our property. They're weatherproof, windproof, easy to lock up, and we use the rubber totes from what we get them from Home Depot. Just a 27-gallon rubber tote, and literally has a white piece of duct tape slapped across the front of it with the client's name. So,
and then I'm
a slave to simplicity.
You must have something in there, when you're done with the jobs, to shows you where all the lights go back up for the next year.
Oh yeah, we map them all out. So every house has its own map, its own install. We call it an install map, and it's just a real crude elevation sketch of the front of the house that's on graph paper, and it shows where our power supply is and where each strand starts and stops. So whenever we remove them, it's actually all it is shipping labels. And we literally wrap a piece of shipping, whatever the map says, this is strand A or strand B. And we just literally wrap a shipping label around the end of the, strand and write A on it. So that next year when you get out, you pull it out and it's you look at the map, there's strand A, here's strand A. Well, we know it goes right there. So it makes it very easy. So, all that stuff's actually been digitized and scanned, and it's on their iPad. So they're not even really dealing with paper anymore. It's all right there on their iPad, and they're able to zoom in, zoom out, and look around and do whatever they want to with it.
And I'm assuming you have a sketch of what the whole house looks like and everything right down there.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yep. How long have you been doing lights for?
This is probably our maybe 10th year doing lights. If I had to guess, I think we started them around probably 14 or 15.
Yeah. But
maybe longer than that, actually. I don't know. Time flies.
So 10 plus years. But throughout the course of the years that I've known you, you've dropped a lot of services.
Yes, we have. Christmas, we've held on to. We got out of construction. We consolidated and hyper focused on the things that we wanted to be good at, not even just necessarily the service, but the sector within the service. We wanted to be the residential company, and we got out of commercial, we got out of construction, we got out of all of that. We didn't do irrigation install. It was just like everybody, you know, in the beginning, you just say yes to everything. And before long, you had this bloated monster that was really hard to keep control of. And we recognized that and made the necessary cuts and got everything under control. And now, since that, we've slowly added one or two things back in here or there as it made sense. But, you know, Christmas lights is something we've held on to the entire time. The profit margin, I feel like we're good at it. You know, you should always ask yourself when you're thinking about your service mix, in my opinion, you know, are we, you know, number one, are we good at it? Is it easy to sell? Is it easy to bill? Is it easy to collect? You know, it's got to be easy across the entire organization for it to really make sense in our eyes.
Isn't it amazing what people will pay for Christmas lights?
It is mind-boggling. So
whoever invented that service, they were sure smart. They were thinking of the right head.
It is mind-numbing, which is why I think that everybody is jumping into it. Is, you know, I would venture to say that most lawn care companies, their average client's probably only worth, you know, maybe $1,200 to $1,500. That's our average Christmas light install.
Right.
So yeah, you know, a one-time service is worth what most people's yearly average is worth. So it makes a lot of sense. You know, that's one of our jobs as a business owner, is to figure out how to make an existing client more valuable. How can we increase their lifetime value, their yearly value, however you choose to look at it. So, and Christmas lights is a really easy way to get a one-time lick, if you will. So you're not even having to manage it over the course of the year. You're having to manage it over a couple of months. So,
so with your program for Christmas lights, is this something that you guys lease the lights, or do you guys make them buy the lights? What model do you guys run?
We explore in the early days, we explored avenues. For us, neither one is right or wrong.
Yeah.
They both have their pros and cons. We use the sell method. I tend to be more fond of that because of the fact that we recover the expense of our lights up front. It also, to me, it, you know, we're in the South and people like that sense of having something tangible to hang on to. So for me, it made the sales process easier, because we were able to tell them, like, you know, look, yes, it's this upfront cost, but like, you own the lights, they're your lights. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're leasing something, it's, to me, if the lights are being leased, it's easier for them to turn you down next year if they don't want to do it. Whereas if they feel like they have this upfront investment in purchasing the lights, it's like, well, God, I already own the lights, I might as well put them up. So,
so their first year, it costs more for the first year than the second year. Let's just say, just an example, is half. For example,
It's about 30% is what it comes out to be. About 30% of the first year price is the actual material, and then after that, it's just the labor to install it and remove it. Like I said, though, I'm aware that for every argument I can come up with to doing the purchase method, there's a very valid argument for doing the lease. Neither one's right or wrong. It's just, for us, it was easier to do it that way. And we also, I mean, I think we've had two or three people come and pick up their lights this year. I mean, that, it doesn't happen. Even if people move on, they don't come get their lights. So after a couple of years, they just tend to just kind of get recycled in, and you can always donate them to somebody, and it gives you a chance to do some goodwill there. But like I said, for me, the bigger things were, is like, when people feel like they own something, they want to be able to utilize it and get their money's worth out of it. Also, you know, part of the process is that we tell people that we'll store the lights as well. Well, when we are in control of the material and the product, it makes it a lot less likely that they're going to call you. You know, if Garrett's got the lights and I'm storing the lights, they're probably not going to call Jonas and get Jonas to quote hanging the lights, because you're already in the system. You're part of the process. So it's just, you know, it's worked well for us. We've been successful with it, and we've enjoyed that way, and we're so deep in it now, I couldn't imagine changing at this point. So
if someone wants to change their bulbs out for the following year, is that something you guys will do, or do they have to pay a little extra fee for that?
How does
that
work? We'll do it, but because you own the material, you know what I mean? Like, the bulbs are yours. So that would be that, and that's a very valid argument. So that's a selling point that people that are doing the lease method, that's a selling point that they're able to use that I can't, you know what I mean? Or that I'm unwilling to. So that would be a very valid argument towards doing the lease method, is that you can offer that to the clients. We just find that people, you know, in our market, it's just not something that we're not getting asked that a whole lot.
Yeah.
It happens, but on very rare occasion.
So if they did, they would just have to pay for the new bulbs?
They would just pay for the new bulb. They've already got the bulk of the material. You would just pay for a bulb. So it wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Cool. You said that when you were tracking your man hour rates before we came on, you said you guys were hitting 100 plus per man hour.
Yes.
Now, is that on your first year installs and on your second year, or a total?
So that's all. That's on the, so that's labor backed out, or that's material backed out. That's just labor. And like I said, it doesn't include the removal yet. That's where we are today, minus the removal. So you got to keep that in your mind. You know, you're collecting your money up front when you install them, but you still have to go back and take them down. And from a time standpoint, it represents around 15 to 20%, you know, however long it takes you to install them, 15 to 20% of that time is going to be required to get them removed. So once it's all said and done, that's kind of where you'll end up landing.
For sure.
So for easy math sakes, if you were at $100 an hour after removal, you'll land somewhere around 80.
So in the summer months, when you're doing billable hours, where do you usually find your billable hours at in the summer compared to winter, like for Christmas lights?
Oh, we're in the 60s during the summer. I mean, that's what I'm saying. So it's a no-brainer for us. It allows us to, you know, it's a great labor gap, you know, and everyone knows, I mean, that's kind of been the resounding center of all conversations the last couple of years is labor. So for us, it's an amazing labor gap. It allows us to keep our guys not just working, but busy.
Yeah.
You know, they've been walking in lots of overtime, and you know, other lawn care companies right now, if you don't have something to do, and I understand some markets are different, but you know, for the most part, you're either sitting around waiting on the snow, or you're wrapping up a couple leaf cleanups, or probably already done. And it makes all the sense in the world.
Especially when you have like your FERT technicians, right? They're probably just wrapping up the season. Maybe for you guys, or maybe they're still doing pre-merger.
You know, so for us with this warm season grass, no, our FERT tech all year round, because we have winterization and then we have to start applying pre-emergence earlier. So it's not the FERT guys. It's all of our landscape maintenance guys. We have a handful of guys that cut grass, but mostly landscape maintenance. It could apply for either or, though.
Yeah. Because up here in the north, like our FERT technicians are just wrapping up with their last round. It gets them a couple, three more months. Yep. And with your guys, like, I think you guys still mow maintenance in the summer or the winter, but it usually goes like bi-weekly, doesn't it?
Yeah. So we're not like with y'all's leads all tend to drop all at one time.
Yeah.
Ours trickle out all throughout the winter. You know, I'm looking out my window right now. I mean, I would say our trees are still probably have 70% of their leaves on them. You know, and so we're not necessarily cutting grass, but we're still doing yard cleanups, if you will. We're just every week, you're getting rid of a few leaves here and a few leaves there. So,
gotcha.
But for the most part, like I said, it slows down.
So
this helps us bridge that.
For sure. So let's take us back from day one. First, I want to know who Garrett was in high school. I know who he is now, but who was Garrett in high school?
Garrett was all I cared about was playing baseball and hunting. And then when I was 16, I started volunteering for the local fire department, And that is, if I look back prior to me being, I don't know, up until I was about 25, I mean, I was a professional firefighter, worked in the city. From my junior year of high school on, that was my, I couldn't imagine myself doing anything but being a fireman. I mean, that was it. I still would argue that it's the greatest job in the world. Unfortunately, it does not pay, as well as others. So, I worked for the Shreveport Fire Department, and, I feel like it's funny because I look back now and I took a lot of the same, drive, if you will, towards that as I even find myself in the business. Like, I had every certification you could, if they offered a class, I was taking it. I had all of these certifications. I worked on the rescue truck and, you know, Jaws of Life and High Angle Rescue and Confined Hazmat. I had it all. But I also had a really expensive hunting habit. And I had to find a way to find that hunting habit. So it started off with me just helping other people cut grass. A lot of firemen cut grass as a side job. Yep. And it's so funny looking back on it now because it makes so much sense looking back. But it's like, so for two summers, I was helping other firemen cut grass. I was basically working for them. And it was like, I was sitting back and I was looking, going like, man, I could do this. This is, you're doing this all wrong. You know what I mean? Like, this is not how I would do it. So I was like, I'm going to do this on my own. So I started cutting grass. And it just kind of started growing and developing. And the city that I worked for had a tuition reimbursement program. So I took some horticulture classes and they reimbursed me for it. So I got to go to that for free basically. And, it kept going and going and going. And one day I looked up and was like, holy crap, I'm making more money at my side job than I am at my real job. And, until I had my first child in 2010 is when my first Gunner was born. And that's when it hit me, because now it was like I was trying to run this $1 million-plus business. Plus, I was trying to be a fireman at one of the busiest stations. Now I had a son I needed to take care of. And it got to be too much. And so I parted ways from the fire department. And that's when I always tell people that my business has two start dates. It really technically started in 2007, whenever I started the business while I was on the fire department. But it wasn't until 2011 is when stuff got real. Like, it was that's when I quit the fire department. It was like, oh crap, I have to make this work now.
For sure. So how long did you do both jobs for?
Well, from 2007 till 2011.
So 4 years.
Yeah.
I did it for 2.5. So it's a long time to do both. So I commend you there. It's a lot of work.
It is. Well, you know, I was fortunate to have good people from the get-go. And the fire department taught me a lot about chain of command and delegating and, you know, you're on the fire department and you get on a big scene. It's like everybody has their job and you have to delegate these tasks out. And I understand all that now from a business aspect. Looking back, you know, I was trying to apply a lot of fire department logic to it. And fortunately it worked out. It worked out well. And there's a lot of correlations to business as well. So,
yeah. So when you jump ship, you know, you had this $1 million business, you didn't really know what to do. So did you go find help? Did you join some groups? Did you find a mentor? Yes. What happened there?
So I did my first, you don't know what you don't know. And I was smart enough to realize that things were okay, but things were definitely not great.
Yeah.
In terms of like, I, there was a hold of me just trying things. And I remember I went to the local college, to the business center, and was hoping that maybe they could help me, and that turned into a big joke. And I joined a local business group, and that just turned all that was referrals. I just, you know, just doing a lot of Google stuff. And I feel like a lot of people in our inner circle have the same story. I ran across a lawn care millionaire video, and it was Jonathan Potosnick, and he was advertising his round tables. And went to a round table, and that is when I feel like, for me, that was a defining moment of like, okay, I just learned quite a bit, but I also learned there's a whole vast ocean of things that I don't know.
Yes.
And that's when my journey truly began, I feel like.
Yeah, and like I said, it's a similar story to here, and hence the podcast, The Pest Control Millionaire. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it came from somewhere, and that'd be our mentor. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be where we're at today. This conversation wouldn't be happening. So,
yeah. 100%. And he's such a humble individual. I don't think he realizes how many lives he's... And I say that. I don't say that lightheartedly or like as cliche-ish or from a corny standpoint. I genuinely don't think he understands how many lives he's touched. And I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't have figured it out some way, but there's no way that I would be as far along as I am had it not been for that.
Yeah.
He just opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Yeah. So, I just had the same conversation with Martha Woodward yesterday. Same exact one.
Made some lifelong friendships. Mike Callahan was at my round table. Talk to the dude on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people like that. And then it's led to friendships like with you and all these other people. So I just, it's crazy because I feel like, I literally feel like I've got somebody's phone number and a genuine friendship with people in so many places. It's like, whenever I go out of town, I always find myself like stopping and thinking like, oh, well, I'm here. Who do I know here? Yeah. You know what I mean? What if there's somebody I can go see?
Yeah, so, we've definitely created a very vast network through all of it.
It's awesome. It's amazing. And what's crazy to think and what gets me excited and makes me wake up and want to keep going at it every day is it's like, I think we've, you know, is big and as impactful as we're talking about this, I think we've only scratched the surface.
Oh, I agree.
There's a whole other world out there of people that are 5, 6, 10 steps ahead of what we're even doing. So that's what's exciting about me. And that's why I love to just keep going and keep exploring and keep meeting and keep trying to figure it all out. So just because it's, you know, like you said, it's if you're the smartest person in the room, you're there in the wrong room.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. I say that frequently. So yeah. You started mowing, maintenance, and you probably got into a little bit of landscaping like everyone else did. When did you start getting like fertilization, weed control, pest control, things like that?
So it turned into us. So I felt like, I don't remember the timeline, but there was a point in the business where I felt like I had to be the everything to everyone. I had to offer it all. And so that's why we started the fertilization part. But it's like we started it, and looking at your business, and I always try to, you know, you always hear that expression, you should work on your business, not in your business. And so I'm always trying to have these, EOS calls them your clarity breaks, you know, and try to really, you know, subjectively look at the business like, you know, well, what is, you know, is this really what I think it is? Try to be unemotional about things. And you look back and it's like, man, once I get them a route built out, it's year round. Like, I don't ever have to worry about that again. You know, if they lose clients, I've got to worry about replacing it. But like for us, pest and fert, it's a year round service. So it's like, all I've got to do is worry about finding clients, picking up clients and building out these routes and just putting quality people in it and leaving them alone, let them do their job. So that's what led to that. Whereas with landscape, you know, I used to joke about with landscaping, you know, people, you would get excited. You'd land this $30,000, $50,000, $100,000, whatever install job. And you should be excited about that. And you would be excited about that. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, this is cool, but where's the next one? It's not like that with the pest. It's just a matter of building and maintaining, which is what led me to the other thing I'm really passionate about. It's like once I realized that and started culling all of these undesirable parts that I didn't want to deal with out of the business, you know, I realized really quick the one thing that I tell people all the time, marketing is the tip of the spear. And that's where I spend the vast majority of my time now within the business, is marketing. I always tell people it's marketing and then sales and then data. If you can get very proficient at managing those three components, everything else will take care of itself.
Yeah. So, in most companies our size, they have a company out there doing it for them, all their marketing. You and I have talked about this many times. It's been hours on the phone, on the bus. We've talked about this over and over again. Yeah. But you actually built out an internal marketing team from you. Yes. Teach me and tell me how to do that. I was like, okay, I start building my marketing team. And then all of a sudden, Dalton comes in, and now we're doing video and doing all this crazy stuff. Yeah. How did you learn? What made you decide, like, I'm going to pull this in-house, just do it myself? Were you good at it? Did you like it? Did you see what?
You know, I enjoy it. I really do enjoy it. I enjoy success. And I, you know, it's undeniable. It's like, hey, when I pour all of my effort and attention into this thing, look at what it spits out. You know what I mean? Look at what the result is. And I'm just bought in 100% to the fact, like, it doesn't matter how good you are at killing bugs. What matters is do people know that you can kill bugs? And when people know that you even exist by means of marketing.
Yeah, there's that quote that says, go ahead.
The second thing is the sales. So you got to be able to get people's attention, but then you got to know how to close it. You got to know how to be able to, I hate to use the word convince, but you got to be able to sell them on why they should be using you. And yeah, it's just, that's the only, it doesn't matter how good of a salesman you are. That's why I say marketing's the tip of the spear. Cause even in sales, as important as I feel like sales is, it doesn't matter how good you are at sales if people don't know you exist.
Yeah. There's a quote that says the best product doesn't win. It's the best known product wins.
I have not heard that, but that's spot on.
I actually have that quote in my office for my office team.
Yes, I'm going. We have a inspirational hallway where we've got a bunch of we call them our isms, our Garrettism. Like everybody, they look like motivational posters, but they're things that people within our business say. And I'm probably going to steal that one, and it'll be in quotation marks, Jonas.
Make sure to send that to me.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's the truth. This is going to sound big and bold when I say this, but I hope that it resonates and makes sense for people. But like, I take this one. This is probably the easiest to digest example. But if you're on a road trip or if you're driving across town, do you stop and think, oh, I want to go get a carbonated sugar drink?
No.
You think to yourself, oh man, I want a Coke. You might go buy a Dr. Pepper or a Pepsi or a Sprite, but what did you think of the back? I'm gonna go buy a Coke. Coke isn't a drink. Coke is a brand. You know what I mean? If you think about if your computer crashed today and you said, "Oh, I need to go buy a computer," you might absolutely hate Apple and not have any intention of buying an Apple. But you're going to subconsciously in the back of your mind when you're thinking about, oh, I need a computer. Well, what kind of computer am I going to get? You guess what? You think about Apple. And Apple's a brand. They represent so many things, but they're a brand. And that is my objective in our market, is that I want to be so informative and so present and just so saturated within my market that, like, if somebody thinks about lawn care or landscaping or pest control, you might not buy from me, but I want you to be, I want our seat at the table. Like if you think, oh, I need to get pest control, and you can't help but just subconsciously think, well, you know what, I'm Matthew's Landscape and Pest does that.
Yeah, that's so, fire.
Or with whatever it is. And that, while that seems like a very daunting task, and maybe it is, maybe I'm not giving it the credit that it's due, it is definitely a game of chess. It is not checkers. It is a long-term play, but it's the people that are in it to win it. It's the people that are running the marathon that are ultimately going to win. And, you know, history might prove me wrong. I don't think it's going to.
I don't think so either. So you do a lot of online marketing, and I know you do a lot of that yourself too, but do you do anything other than online marketing?
We sponsor events. We're a sponsor at every single private school in our market. Every single one. Who sends their kids to private school? People
with money.
People that have got disposable income. Mm-hmm. And who spends money on services? People with disposable income. You know, so that's what I'm saying. It's where are your eyeballs? Where is the attention? That's where I'm going to go. And I also am very big, and this is where I find myself sometimes having to pull back because something might not work. I'm going to do the opposite of whatever you're doing because I do not want to do with the map. I just changed with our Christmas lights this year. We completely pulled a 180 halfway through the season with our marketing message because everybody else, and I know this isn't all about Christmas lights, but it's a relevant example. Everybody, and myself included, we came out of the gates with, you know, our schedule's filling up fast. Hurry up. You know, we've got a few spots left. Don't forget to get scheduled. And next thing I know, it's like everybody is saying the same thing. I immediately went to our operations team. I went to our sales team. I said, this is what I want to say. And you got to make sure you can facilitate it. We completely pulled the 180 and said, like, hey, yeah, we've got all the capacity we need. We'll give you same day estimate, next day install. You know what I mean? Like everybody else says that they're super busy, super swamped. We're not. We can get out there today and give you your estimate. And sometimes that doesn't work quite as well as I want it to. But like this year, it worked out beautifully. The day we changed our message, we started getting people like, hey, you said you can get out here today? We're like, absolutely. And then I didn't think about this at the time, but we were able to double down on it because now we used it as a time-sensitive selling point. You know, somebody would call early enough and we have enough constant communication internally that we would tell people like, hey, yeah, so you would call at 9 o'clock. Somebody was there by 11 and we would tell you like, yeah, if you'll accept it right now, I probably know. As a matter of fact, I know I'll get you installed today. So, and it just, people are like, oh, you know, screw it. Yeah, let's go ahead and do it. So to me though, the success of the operations, it all goes back to marketing and how we were putting ourselves out there. So
there's a really good book, I got to drop a book on here. You know me, it's called The Little Big Brand. It's really, really good book. So if you ever, it's short read. It's probably less than 100 pages, but it's called Building a Little Big Brand.
Okay.
So check
it out.
I've
not heard that one. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm good for a book or two.
Yeah. Go figure. So,
yeah,
The Little Big Brand.
Yeah.
It's you really, got to text that to me when this is over.
Yeah, I will. I'll drop you the link.
It's doable. It's possible. And that's the message. It's funny because I had this conversation with with Aaron Suttonfield just earlier today. And I think that anybody on their journey from zero to a million, I think outsourcing your marketing makes a ton of sense because when you're in that zone, there is a lot of things that do require your intimate attention. But I would tell anybody past a million, if you're not hyper-focused on learning your marketing, you're screwing up. You're really missing the boat. You know, stop and think about how much effort and energy. So if I can get you to buy into the fact and believe what it is I'm telling you, that marketing is the tip of the spear. If you had the quote, you're going to have to send me the quote that's going to go on the wall too. It's not the best It's not the best product that sells. It's the best known product.
Exactly.
If you believe that, if you will buy into that, the best known product, well, the only way to become the best known is marketing. So if you stop and think about all the effort and energy we pour into agronomy and learning grass and how to take care of grass and how to most effectively route our clients and service them or kill bugs and all these things that we sell, you know, with you and sales, think about how much effort, energy you put into learning sales and not to take away from those things because those things are super important, but it's like marketing's the one thing. It's because it's scary. Nobody wants to, it's so subjective and it's so vast. But if people would just put a fraction of that effort and energy into honing their knowledge base and their skill towards marketing, man, it would be, it would, the dividends it would pay is just so massive.
Yeah. So, and so we call our sales guys residential marketers.
Okay. Right?
Because we have 30 plus marketing guys, I could say, in one market. They're basically going, telling out the whole area of what we do.
Yeah.
So it's a part of a marketing tactic too. It's not the end all be all. It's just like anything else. It's just one leg to stand on. There's so many different legs throughout marketing and sales. It's just one leg. It's not the end all be all, but it does work.
Yep.
So if there was, what is the best and most important advice you could give someone in business?
Be humble and seek an education.
I love that. And I would agree 100%. And that's probably what I would say too. Like you have to be, I've talked about hundreds of times, just be humble. Like know that you're not so great. Like you might be doing big things, but you said there's hundreds of thousands of people out there doing way bigger things than what we are.
There are.
And you just have to be humble and learn.
Seek an education.
Yeah.
So an education comes in so many ways. You know, we joke about the University of YouTube, these books, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I can't tell you at this point in the game, like I find myself saying so many things and regurgitating so many things. And like, I don't even know anymore what was an original thought versus what is something I read in a book versus something I've heard from, you know, I'll look back in 2 years, I'll find myself going like, yeah, you know, it's not the best product that gets sold. It's the best known product. And I'll have to, how did I get that? You know, I'm going to remember it from you though, because I have it as a poster, but
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah. Anyway, you should always be trying to figure out how to do it better. So I'm going to go back to it's another one of our posters, the enemy of great is good. And there's so many people that are out there that are content with being good. And like, it's just like the quote is, that's the enemy of great.
I love that. So I got a question for you. It's a random question. What are you most proud of in your business?
What am I most proud of?
We don't get to think about this very often, do we?
Today? Are you talking about like today as we sit here?
Yeah,
as we sit here today.
Yeah.
I have a leadership team that I would just go to battle with. I would go to war in any market, in any service. Taking some time. I don't think I tried to make them realize how appreciated they are. That is something that I'm most proud of. Couldn't even begin to guess at what version I am on of the leadership team I've got in place now, has been in place for golly going on. I think the least tenured person has been in the company for 5 years, has been on the team for 2.5, the leadership team 2.5. That's honestly probably what I'm most proud of is my leadership team. They're rock stars. I would put everyone in my leadership team up. So back to what we originally said, and bold statement, but it's one I can make because I'm most proud of it. But I know I've met a lot of business owners And I know a lot of smart business owners that are doing it way better than I am. But I'm telling you right now, every single person on my leadership team could probably go out and manage and run over half the businesses that I've interacted with. And that's a humbling. I feel very humbled and very proud of that fact that, you know, I've tried to be smart about taking advice and just letting good people be good people. So,
yeah.
And fun facts, and this is for everybody out there listening that's thinking about hiring more people and their leadership team. There's not a single person on my leadership team, and we're not running a small company. And I have four people outside of myself on the leadership team. Not a single one of them came from the green industry. Every single one of them was hired simply because we saw something in them. It's like, man, I can take this and run with it. You know what I mean? I'll teach you. I can't teach you what I see in you right now. I can teach you my product.
Absolutely.
So that's what we did, and it's been massive for us.
With those people, did you find them on D? Did you know them personally? Did you recruit them?
Were they it's a wide variety of things. It's funny. So I love to tell this story about our we follow the EOS film, so he's technically considered an integrator. Yep. Most people would refer to him as a general manager. His name's Curtis. But I don't even remember how old he was at the time. He was maybe 25 years old. We were advertising for an operations manager, and this guy literally came in, and then in his interview, he opened up his interview with, he was like, "Hey man, look, I'm only 25 years old and I'm probably not the guy you're looking for, but I want to be an operations manager one day. So I'm considering this as much practice for myself, learning how these interviews go." And I was like, wow. Obviously, somebody that's going to say something like that. There were a lot of other things I saw in him. And we have a heavy oil and gas industry in this area. And it had just gone into a downturn. And he kind of got wrapped up into that. And I told him, I looked him in the face. I said, "I don't have a spot for you. I can create a spot for you." I said, I can pay you $12 an hour today. I don't know what you're going to be doing, but I promise you within 6 months, you won't be a helper and you won't be making $12 an hour. And he was like, "I'm going to take your word on that." And literally he dug ditches with an irrigation tech his first week, making $12 an hour. And I look back now, and that's been, gosh, I don't know how long ago that's been now, 7 or 8 years ago. And now he's basically running the business. He's running the day-to-day of the business for me. So that's a fun story. And I know the original question, I've got two of them were in here as referrals. Kayla, that runs all our business and finance, she actually was hired. She came through a staffing agency. I was so shorthanded. I went out to a staffing agency to look for some help. And within weeks of her being here, I was like, "Oh, you're not going anywhere." So, and you look back now, and she's, she knows as much about the numbers as I do. So it's fun.
Yeah, for sure. I know you're a super busy guy. And you're constantly working like most of us. What do you do to take your mind off of it at night, or how do you separate, or what do you try to do? Do you have anything fun?
I love to hunt. you can see that in the back. I love to hunt.
Do you think it's important to take a little break once in a while?
I think that we can trick ourselves into thinking that we're taking a break. I think it's something that we're always thinking about.
Yeah.
My daughter's on a travel softball team that I'm fortunate enough to be able to help with. And so that's something that's fun. I get to completely remove myself and go out for a weekend. I get to spend time with her and get away from the business. But even at that, you know, they'll be in the middle of a softball tournament, you know, in the fifth inning of a game. And I'll find myself just kind of like, "No, maybe we ought to consider doing this." You know? So yes, I think it's important to find something, some sort of outlet. You know, obviously working out is a good one, but I think you also ought to just accept the fact that it's okay. It's okay for it to be top of mind. So it doesn't need a control, but it's okay. You're not alone. If you're always thinking about it, you're not alone.
Yeah, that's my point. I wanted to bring it up because it doesn't shut off. You know, it doesn't matter if we're having another conversation or at a sporting event. Like you said, in the middle of a conversation with someone else, like something else is going in the back of my head.
Yes.
So that's just normal. So if you guys are having that, if you're having that issue or think it's an issue, it's just totally normal.
That's funny. So it's true.
How do you manage your time throughout the day? Because like I said, I know like you have other people to help you, but how do you manage that time? You got to spend time with those guys, and you have to spend time out like checking on jobs or doing your marketing. And how do you manage your time?
So, you know, as I said earlier, I told you that to me, the three most important things is marketing and then sales and then data. And I've got it's another thing that's always changing and has developed over the years, but I've got a KPI sheet that is constantly updated that I look at. And, they've always say that when you think about KPIs, like everybody should have five or six numbers. Like there's five or six numbers that if you're the analogy has always been, if you were on a stranded island and I could give you a postcard with four to five numbers on it that said how your businesses were doing, what would those numbers be? And so like I have those, I have a few more than five or six that I watch, but like, and I watch my numbers, I'd look at my scorecard, just kind of get a vibe for where things are going. And then from that point on, you know, I always try to check in with Curtis and Kayla and Donna and Jonathan, the people in the leadership team. And I just try to make myself available. A lot of times I'll start the day off not really knowing what I'm going to do. Emily, who's in charge of all of our content, I spend a lot of time with her, you know, making videos, and I'll just go, man, I might sit in a chair and put my feet up on the desk, and I might sit in the marketing office for an hour, and we'll just sit in there and just, you know, we call it a little powwow session. And we're just like, you know, we need to think about this. Like, how can we make this work? How can we put a spin on this? What's relevant right now? And just those conversations, I'm have been accused of probably being too friendly. You know what I mean? Like we are so anti-corporate feeling, you know what I mean? While the chain of command is important, everybody feels like they can come and talk to me. You can go talk to anybody for that matter. So like, especially with the marketing and the sales team, you know, we're always, any one on the person on the sales team might come, you know, if they see me walk in the hall, hey, I'm trying to sell so-and-so this, you know, what do you think about this? You know, I love that stuff. You know, I love getting pulled back in every now and again, like to go look at an estimate with somebody like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. Do you like that? What do you think? And, you know, sometimes I wonder if they're doing that because they know I like it or if they're doing it because they really want the help. So, but nonetheless, it's still fun. But at the same time, on the flip side of that, if I didn't show up till 10 o'clock, I probably wouldn't even get a phone call out of anybody. So that's cool as well because, you know, I'm here because I want to be here. I choose to be here. And more importantly, I get to be here. But at the same time, I don't have to be here. I've invested in and bought my freedom. And that's what I think ultimately all entrepreneurs are after and want is they want their freedom and the ability to do what they want to do on their terms.
I couldn't agree more. It seems like you're having a lot of fun.
Yes, that is a good way of putting it.
Yeah, you really enjoy your business. And I'm sure it hasn't always been that way, but you built a solid business where you finally – last few years got to take a little bit of a break, you know, and you deserve it.
Back to book, like you said too, though, I'm also humbled by the fact and aware of the fact that Simon Sinek, one of his last books, The Infinite Game, I don't know if you've read that.
You sent it to me. I haven't read it yet.
So, but how he talks about, and I'm very well aware of the fact that like right now, like you said that, but so it's I'm glad that that is the perception that I'm putting out, because I am having fun. I'm having a blast, but I'm also very well aware of the fact that, like, you know what, this is a game of business. And if you're in it and you're in it for the long haul, it's going to change. And I know that, man, I could be 2 months, 12 months, 24 months away from something happening within my business. And I'm fully prepared to get drawn right back in to go fix whatever that is. And, you know, there's no finish line. There's no set of rules that says who's winning and who's losing. It's you're doing good, you know, and some years are better than others, and it's a game. It's just one big game, playing the game, and I love the game of business.
Yeah, same here. What's the future look like with Matthew's Lawn and Pest?
That's a good question. You know, we're still growing. We're still on an upward trajectory. We have, so this year we ventured back into the commercial sector. We're adding top dressing to our lawn care, arm of things. We bought some equipment. So I think for me, it's to, keep developing. Like I said earlier, I have my A suite is there. My leadership team is there. My B suite is pretty strong. We need to keep developing and working with them. We're working with our C suite. You know what I mean? And that's fun. We're going to keep developing leaders, within the organization, keep stacking that bench. You know, it would create so much happiness for me to lose somebody to another company for a man, you know, because of their potential that was recognized by them and somebody else, and me just not having the ability to offer them anything right now. Like, that would suck, but I would be like, yeah, man, they're getting a rock star and I helped them become a rock star. So, you know, we're going to keep adding services, keep trying to figure out how to just make ourselves better. We definitely, so something that I've noticed, on the path to, this is what data tells us, on the path to growing and trying to get bigger, you know, like next year, if you talk about immediate future, we're definitely fixing to shift attention more heavily on attrition. Probably losing a few more people than what we should. You know, moving your attrition rate 1% has such a massive impact compared to moving your close rate 1%. So, you know, if you're not watching that, that's definitely you need to be keeping an eye on. We're gonna put a lot more focus and attention on that. But yeah, we're just gonna kind of keep on keeping on, keep having fun, just keep trying to make everything better for everybody.
I love that. Cool, man. Well, we're just about an hour in. It's over an hour. I know you're busy and we're busy, but I just want to get you on here because you're a stud and I appreciate it. But like, I don't want to keep you all day either.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, this will help out a lot of people. I appreciate being here and look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, Dave. We'll holler at you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Pest Control Millionaire. If you are not already subscribed, we would really like if you did that. And please leave us a glowing review on iTunes. For the first 8 weeks that we have this show launched, we are going to give away a $50 Amazon gift card every week to a random person who gives us a nice review on iTunes. That's how important it is to us. Also, we want you to be involved with the show. Please send any questions you have about entrepreneurship, how to grow your business, anything about the service industry to info@pestcontrolmillionaire.com. We will answer them on the show. We have the best guests in the service industry, so why not get their take on your problems? Thanks for listening again, and we'll see you in the next one.